Today's chapel speaker is Dr. Max Barnett. He's professor of collegiate ministry at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth. Earned his bachelor's degree from Texas A&M University, his master of divinity from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, and his doctorate of ministry from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Dr. Barnett has served as the Baptist student director for 37 and a half years at the University of Oklahoma. In addition to his teaching responsibilities at Southwestern Seminary, he's a volunteer consultant for numerous college ministries and seminaries across the country. Also serves on the board of the Southern Baptist Convention. Dr. Barnett and his wife Sandra have one married son and four grandchildren. And as we were in the green room before chapel, Ms. McGinnis mentioned to me that he believes that through Max's ministry of these many years, that there are more missionaries and journeymen on the field through his ministry than any other person in the convention. So we want to hear from Dr. Max Barnett this morning.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Now, my perspective is that of working with university students. I've never grown up. I love to work with students. It's all I've done all my life, and I want to continue for the rest of my life. You know, one of the things that I think we're finding is when college, most of people come to the university campus, they're ill-equipped to live on that campus, much less to be a witness to it. And I'm talking about students that have spent their life in the church. So one of the problems that I think we need to address is when we're thinking about youth is we've got to go back. What is basically wrong with our approach to ministry? And I think we have some real wrong approaches to ministry. You know, so our problem is broader than just that of students. One of the great dangers I think you face is seminary students. And I very much believe in this seminary. I'm so grateful to God for you and the stand you've taken on the Word of God and how you're being equipped to preach the Word. But don't you ever think for one second that becoming a great expository preacher is all that is needed to disciple people. Because it takes far more than that. Fact is, I think one of the biggest problems we have is that we don't disciple people because we don't spend time with them. Recently, I took a yellow pad and I thought, you know, Jesus spent probably 2.5, maybe about 2.5 years with the disciples, something like that. And I can't imagine those guys sleeping over 8 hours a day. And so a lot of days he spent 16 hours a day with them. Now, I'm going to stretch this illustration a little bit, but let's just suppose that for 2.5 years, Jesus basically got 16 hours a day with them. Now, we know that's not exactly true, but I'm going to use other illustration in a minute, and I'm going to really stretch it, okay? And so I figured that out. In 2.5 years, let's say Jesus started with those disciples. I don't know how old they are to make it simple. Let's say they were 20. And when they were 22.5, one day Jesus said, bye. And you 11 guys are to go into all the world and make disciples. Now, how in the world, and we know that the nations that he tells them to go to are people groups. How are 11 men going to go to all the people groups in the world? They are not. The only way they're going to do that is to multiply. And so, if Jesus spent about 16 hours a day, I figured that up, that would be over 15,000 hours he got with those disciples in about 2.5 years. Now, let's say a pastor today started with a guy when he's 20, and he begins to meet with him, he's going to meet with him, and he comes to hear him preach every Sunday morning, every Sunday night, has him in a Bible study once a week, and spends an hour with him at lunch. That's 4 hours a week, and let's suppose, as I said, I'm going to stretch it, he never takes a vacation. The guy never takes a vacation. He spends 4 hours a week with him every single week for 50 years. That's a little over 10,000 hours, and Jesus would have gotten almost 5,000 hours more with the disciples in that period of time than a pastor would in 50 years. And by the way, if he started when 20, when he's finished, the guy is 70. One of the problems we have, now, we can't get that kind of time with people. But let me tell you, we have got to spend time with people. And one of the things we're seeing, why is the divorce rate in America about the same among Christians and non-Christians? And the problem is we have not discipled our people. You do, and in the New Testament, I think you see three things. You see the large group meetings. That'd be your Sunday morning crowd. It's great for teaching. It's great for preaching. If you have 10 more than you had last Sunday, it doesn't take away from your effectiveness. It's tremendous for worship. But then you also see the small groups. The small groups are much better for accountability. It's much better for connectedness. It's much better for people really understanding. I remember a man, if I called his name, most of you would know of him, a tremendous preacher. And my buddy took a guy to hear him one time, and he preached on the family altar. So the next week, my buddy's getting with his friend, and he said, what do you think about that message? He said, I thought it was a tremendous message. But he said, I've looked all around my house, and I don't know where we could build one of those things. And when he mentioned, he said, you know, that's the way it is sometimes. Preachers say things we don't understand. Said what he's talking about is spending time with God. Well, this man had been to Mexico and seen those big altars, and he just didn't see how he could build one of those things in his house. Totally missed the point. And what we have to do is get with people. Now, you may pastor a church with 6,000 people, but you better get some time to train a few men. Can a man run a million dollar business and train a few men? Yes. Now, one of the problems sometimes people have is they think, well, you've got to treat everyone alike. Well, you know, one of the things I noticed with Jesus, I never find one single criticism in the New Testament about him spending time with the 12. And he spent time with those men. He preached, he taught, he fed people, he did a lot of things, but he poured his life into a few men. You know, a number of years ago, I called a pastor and asked him to go to Glen Eyrie with us. We were going on spring break, and we used to take about 250 students from the University of Oklahoma every year to that conference ground. And he said, well, Max, you mean the Navigator headquarters? And I said, yeah, have you heard of them? And he said, well, yes, I have. He said, I know about them. They led me to the Lord when I was in the Navy, and they discipled me. And when they found out I was transferring off the ship, the guy met with me every day. But he said, I found out when I got in a church it wouldn't work. And I said, what do you mean it wouldn't work? I don't think Jesus would have told us to make disciples if it wouldn't work. And he said, well, I was talking to a lady in the church, and she's in charge of the mission. And she said, well, Pastor, you can't spend more time with some men than you do others. And I said, do you know Luke 22, 31, and 32? He said, well, I don't think so. I said, well, Jesus is talking to Simon, and he says, Simon, Simon, Satan has desired to have you that he may sift you as wheat, but I've prayed especially for you, and when you get straightened out, you help the brethren. Now, when Jesus said, I've prayed especially, first of all, he said, Satan's desired to have you. This you is, in the Greek, it's plural. He's desired to have all of you, but I have prayed for you. This time it's singular. I've prayed especially for you. When you get straightened out, you help the brethren. And so he said, well, we need to get together. So we did. I began to help him. And every Thursday morning, he had gone back to his church, he began to pray God would give him a man. So he found this young lawyer. Every Thursday morning, he'd have breakfast with him, and then he'd come by my office. He said, Max, it's the beatenest thing I've ever seen. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I'm sitting up there Sunday and about to preach, and I look out there, and here's this lady. And her husband's not a Christian. And he's come to church with her, and he thinks, now I need to get by to see that man. He said, as soon as church is over, this young lawyer comes to me, and he said, Pastor, I was praying Saturday the other night, and I just thought, I need to get by and see this guy because I know he's not a Christian. Said, I had a great witness with him. I think he's close to becoming a Christian. He is in church this morning. He said, next Sunday I get up to preach. And I look out, and I see a young couple. I know they're having marital problems. And he said, so I think I need to get by to see him. As soon as the service over, this guy comes out and said, you know so-and-so and his wife, we all know they're having a marital problem. Said, I went by and had a great time with them last week. They're in church this morning. Said, Pastor, I think they're going to make it. Let me tell you, if you want help, you're going to have to raise it up. And so you preach, you teach, you do all you can, but give your life to a few key people. When I went to the University of Oklahoma, I began to pray. Now, our school was growing at the rate of 1,000 students a year. And I thought, if you froze everybody else on the campus and didn't let me have that 1,000, we're not even reaching them. So I thought, I've got to have help. So I started a little Bible study. And I decided we're going to study the book of 1 Thessalonians. And by the way, I would highly recommend you spend a lot of hours in 1 and 2 Thessalonians. You want to know why Paul had the phenomenal ministry he had? The first letter he wrote, you read the first three chapters he penned, and I think you'll see why. And so Paul goes in 1 Thessalonians 1:5. He said, our gospel didn't come to you in word only, but also in power and the Holy Spirit. And you know, and so he first of all talks about evangelism. So wherever we go, we evangelize. And then he says, you know what kind of men we proved to be among you. Here he purposefully calls attention to the quality of his own life. You're going to reproduce basically what you are. And again, you see in 1 Corinthians 11:1, wherefore I beseech you, be ye followers of me. 1 Thessalonians 4:15-17, he says, you know, he says, though you may have 10,000 instructors, you may have countless tutors in Christ. He said, you have one spiritual daddy, and that's me. And wherefore, I beseech you, be ye followers of me. And because Paul couldn't come at that time, he said to those people, for this cause, I'm going to send you Timothy. And he said, when he's come, he's going to bring you into remembrance of my ways, which be in Christ, as I teach everywhere in every church. Now, Paul went to different countries, different places, but there's certain things he taught everywhere in every church. And you see this again and again. Be imitators of me. Philippians 4:9, he says, those things you've both learned and received and heard and seen in me do, and the God of peace shall be with you. And so Philippians 3:17, he said, I want you to follow my example, and you mark those people who live according to the pattern you have in us. And 2 Thessalonians 3:7-9, he talks about, and here he's talking about in the context of working and giving. And he says, you know how we made ourselves an example. Why? In verse 9, so you would follow our example. And so people aren't going to just follow your example if all you do is preach to them. And I don't want to offend some of you, but some pastors that I've known in America operate more like a cuckoo clock than any better way I know to illustrate it. The appointed time comes, the door opens, come out, say what you got to say, and go back in, and nobody sees you till the next appointed hour. You will not build disciple makers like that. And when Jesus said, you go into all the world and you make disciples and you teach them all I commanded you, and you're being trained to preach and to teach them all that Jesus commanded, but notice what he had just said. You teach them to obey all I've commanded you. And what had he just finished in his breath commanding them to do? To make disciples. We are not finished with people in the church until they're disciple makers. And we fail tremendously at this point. When a person becomes a Christian, we ought to get people trained in our churches so somebody, and especially for adults, somebody his own age and his own sex can begin to meet with him personally. Now, there are two ways we make disciples. We make disciples as a part of the body, and that's where we use our gifting. A person comes to church, maybe becomes a Christian. You're a pastor. You preach to him. Maybe he's in a Bible study. We use our gifts, and we raise up people. But that's the way people have been made disciples in America, and look where we are. That's why our divorce rate's about the same. Because we've missed one or the other thing. We have the large groups, we may have the small groups, but we've missed the person to person. And a person may be in a small group, and some of you, we hear a lot about accountability. I just read a book last week when the guy said, you know, we think that in small groups you can have real honest accountability. He said, I was in a group where two guys lied to me for 2 years because usually if they have a shame-based sin, something that they're going to confess is going to bring shame to thee, they will lie to you before they'll tell you the truth. But the great thing about the small group, you can have some accountability and you can share and do some things. But the way you're going to build strong disciples, and I don't think you'll build them unless you do it man to man. Now, I know that You know, you could take every six-year-old in America and kick him out of his home. Let him go home. He's out playing with his friends. Let him go home. The door's locked. His parents are moved. And just let, he's on his own. Some of them, by the grace of God, would make it. But a lot of them wouldn't. And sometimes we see people and they do rise up and God does a great work in their life. But there's so many more. If when they became Christians, and especially when they became Christians, I think if a person really becomes a Christian, I think at that point he's probably very, very open. And if somebody could begin to meet with him. And you know, when I came to University of Oklahoma, I began to pray. And I thought, God, I need help. So I go to the Baptist building. Can I get an associate? We don't have any money for associates. Okay, I'll give half my salary away and find half of somebody to come. And then next year, 2 years later, two-thirds. And I've got to have help. I can run the program. I can get the speakers. But I cannot personally disciple very many people. And so I started a little Bible study. I said, guys, here's what we're going to do. We're going to study 1 Thessalonians. Then we're going to go out in the dorms and witness. And what's going to happen when we begin to do that? And they just kind of look at me. I said, now, guys, we're going to go out in the dorms. We're going to witness. What's going to happen? Somebody said, well, somebody will become a Christian. I said, I guarantee you, I promise you that's true. May not be the first time, but they will. So that's what we're going to do. So we're going to study what we're going to do with them when they do become Christian. So we began to meet. Now, I had five guys in that Bible study. We began to pray. We began to spend time with them. And one semester before they enrolled, I said, I want 12 and a half hours. I want 10 and a half hours of your time this semester. And so we would meet on Monday and for 2 hours, and we'd pray, and we'd do Bible study, and we'd go out in the dorm and witness. You know, I see people all the time. They say, well, people are really busy. I know they're busy. And it's, even the bum on the street barely gets in the whole day. You know, everybody's busy, 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 busy. But, you know, I've found people will give you time if you'll invest in their life. And what I'm reading now about young men going out into the business world, they want mentors. They want to go to work for a company. They want to have an influence in that company, and they're longing for somebody to spend time with them. And so many of the kids raised today, their moms and dads are both working. They haven't had the time with them. And they love people. I've got young men are calling me wanting to get time. I'm 74 years old. And people think, well, you know, they're willing to spend time with anybody if they'll put some time in. So I began with those guys. Well, one of them, Brett Yon's been at the University of Oklahoma now for 40 years. He came out of that group. Bob Anderson been at Kansas State for 40 years. Jack Owens at Iowa State for 40 years. Now, he did take an 8-year break. And he was appointed as a missionary to Korea, and he told Southern Baptists, when I go to Korea, I'm not going to spend my life. I'm going over there for one reason. I'm going over to raise up my replacement. 8 years later, he came back. Now there are 5 national student workers. They had none when he got there that were giving their full time on the college campuses. And so the other fella came to know the Lord through that, and he's been at Michigan State now those years. I didn't call those guys to do what they're doing, but when you will invest in men's lives and people's lives, they want to do what you want to do. And when I came to the University of Oklahoma, 120 guys on the football team, I was talking to a guy one day, one guy on the third team that ever came to church. I said, you're kidding. He said, no, I'm not kidding. He said, you can come over here Sunday morning. Our dorm is like a tomb. He said, now, maybe if they're Catholic or someplace, they go home, they may go to church, but I'll tell you, in Norman, Oklahoma, I have 120 guys. I'm the only one that'll get them to go to church. So we began to pray and went over and started the Bible study. One day, a coach called and he said, we've got this boy we really want. He has the fastest time in the nation, and he happens to be a Baptist. Would you like to meet with him? So I began to meet with him. It took me from September to February to get him to memorize his first verse. But I noticed one night when I left his room, I'd go in and I'd talk with him and I'd share with him and he'd just look at me. But I noticed one night, I knew that night, I saw it in his eyes that God had changed his life. And so we began to work with guys. And so I met with these fellas. And then next year we took some of those sophomores and they were going to lead Bible studies. The Bible studies died. They weren't ready to lead Bible studies. I said, you get them together and I'll meet with them. And then when they began to, that year, Joe Wiley was one of those guys. And out of the, at the time, it was all Big Eight. There were 10 members of the Big Eight team, all seniors on the Big Eight team and one sophomore. And so we began to meet. And so I said to Joe one day, I said, Joe, what are you going to do this summer? And he said, oh, boy, I'm going to make a lot of money. Now, he said, the coaches have got me a very good job. Now, that was before all the NCAA regulation. Some of those still manage to get broken every once in a while. But anyway, he said, I'm going to make a lot of money this summer. I said, Joe, before you take that job, can I offer you another job? I said, we need a janitor over at the BSU. And you could work 4 hours a day in this little apartment there. And you know how much I'll pay you? He said, no, how much? I said, I won't give you one red cent. But I promise you this. Joe, there's something you need a whole lot more than money. You need to learn how to walk with God and have a ministry. And I said, if you'll stay this summer, I promise you one thing. I will give you my life. I said, you've been getting a lot of invitations from churches to go speak and things. And they'll give you a little line on the room. You'll have enough to live on. But we will spend hours together. And so we did. We'd drive from Norman, Oklahoma on Sunday morning to Wichita, Kansas. And he'd give his testimony and I'd sit in the balcony. But you know, it's 3 hours to Wichita Falls from Norman, Oklahoma in that car together. And we spent hours together. And I said, now, Joe, let me tell you, this is what, now, what we're going for. And we'd get the list of all the players that are coming. I'd say, why don't we go visit them in their homes? Most of them are from Oklahoma and Texas and New Mexico. So we scattered. That year, they could recruit 45. We visited 25 of them in their homes. And Eddie Foster, later All-American at OU, he goes to Hobbs, New Mexico, and knocks on the guy's door. He said, I know you're an offensive tackle. I'm an offensive tackle. When you come to Oklahoma, I want you in my Bible study. The guy looked at him and said, yes, sir. This kid was a Mormon. I could turn on television for years and see pro football players, and I remember when they accepted the Lord. One night I go over the dorm, and this kid says, Max, I guess Joe and Eddie going to be mad at me, because he said, you know, they've been witnessing to me, and said, last night, I knew what they were telling me is true. And I've seen you guys and the way you live. And he said, I land up on my bunk. And he said, I just looked up to heaven and said, Jesus, come on in. He said, I got saved right up there, but they weren't with me. You think they'll be mad at me? I said, no, Jim, that'll be okay. And we began to see God, things happen. And so I said, now, guys, this is what we've been praying for. So while those kids are still in high school, we decide whose Bible study they're going to be in. Because, you know, most of the people, when they come, they're the kind you can go by the room and say, let's go get a beer, and they'll go get a beer. Or you can go by and say, I want you in Bible study. And let me tell you, that's the way the students are today. It's whoever wants them the most. And we need to be discipling. And one of the reasons we lose so many of them when they come to the college campus, let me clue you in. We've lost most of them before they ever get to the campus. One Sunday, we scattered across Oklahoma with our students. We went to the high school departments all across and went into the high school departments, and we began to ask, you got any students coming to OU? Well, wasn't Joe coming to OU, but he hadn't been here in a long time. And because we don't start discipling them, and we need to start with our young people. If they're old enough to accept the Lord, they're old enough to begin to follow Jesus. And we need to do something with them besides games. We need to have people that will meet with those people and begin to really disciple them. And that needs to be true all over. Well, we started with those guys, and I said, fellas, this is what we've been looking for. We're going to go after them. And so we decided we'd bring them in May, right after these football players, right after they graduate from high school. And we'd get a start with them before, and so we sent out letters. Now, the freshman coach was a Christian, and Joe Wiley was Christian, so I took a little cassette and I put it on the outside of it from freshman coach Don Jemerson, the halfback Joe Wiley. We put the school song on it. They put their testimony. We sent them out to all those players. We invited them to come in for retreat. It looked like at one time we were going to have most of them. Joe was talking to a kid from New Jersey that we'd recruited. He said, I'd love to come to that retreat. I don't have the money. Joe said, I do. I've saved every penny that I didn't have to eat on that they've given me. And he said, I'll send you the money for your ticket. We had 25 of them to come in out of 43. Five of them accepted the Lord that weekend. The next fall out of 43, we had 30 every week in Bible study. And I see what can happen because of spending time with individuals. So as you go out in your ministry, you start, you preach, you teach, but don't be like a cuckoo clock. You know, one night with one of the guys I'm training, I walk into his room and we go in, we're witnessing the guy next door, and he walks into this room and there's a picture there of this boy's girl. He doesn't know who it is, and he sees that picture and said, who's that pig? And so I had to get aside to him and explain the way of God more perfectly. You don't say that about somebody's girl. Now, see, he could have come to church forever. And a lot of times these people that are coming to our church, we don't know what's going on out in their life, and we won't unless you get time with them. And you know, not only do we have a time problem, we got a place problem. You know, when that pastor meets with that guy, it's always in a building. Well, you know, not all of life goes on in a building. Have you ever noticed that? But it's always in a church or a restaurant. What about the way he treats his wife? What about going on vacation with him? Won't you take mission trips with him? Get with those people so you know what's going on in their life. See, if you as a pastor go to a business to try to have a ministry, you're an outsider. But you begin to build into the lives of those people, and they're on those jobs, and they're insiders wherever they are, and there they can have a ministry. Now, I've got to close because I'm talking about students, but I got to tell you something. When you get out in the world, you know, I've known pastors, and I remember a man saying one time, I know this pastor, and I really think he'd like to reach the whole world if he could get them sitting on his pew. Now, you're not going to get the whole world sitting on your pew. There are guys out on that campus, some with parachurch groups and things. And I know some people, especially when they become a pastor, the only thing they see in the New Testament is the local church. Ralph Winters talks about modality and sodality. He talks about the congregation and the mission opportunity. He says, you look in the history of the world, the church has never done well in reaching the lost and going around the world unless they were mission organizations. And you see in the New Testament, as much as you'd like for every single person to walk with God and be all they could be, they will not be. And so you preach and you teach, but there'll be certain ones like Paul and others coming out of that group, and they're the missionary organizations. And sometimes that will happen in your church, and some of those may be parachurch organizations. And wherever you are, if there's a college campus guy, you try to encourage the people that are working on that campus, because I'm telling you, they're having a hard enough time. And you do everything you can in your own church and with others who are ministering to students to try to see that people are raised up. And you know, I wouldn't trade places with anyone in the world. And college students, I think, are one of the greatest opportunities. I want to just close with this. I want to tell you some advantages of working with university students. They're young, usually. Now, some old lady will graduate when she's 80, but it's in the paper, and that happened. They're accessible. They have gaps in their daily schedule. Nearly any student, if he's interested, you can get time with him to meet with him personally. You can get him in a small group. You can get him at your Thursday night meeting or something. So they're very accessible. They have gaps in their schedule. For example, how many laymen do you know get a month off for Christmas? How many get a week off for spring break? How many get their summers off? And every summer we try to have with our students. We want every student that we can possibly get to at least spend one summer overseas. And so they have great gaps. They can go in summer training programs. I was just talking to a young man today. I've never met him, but he was in one of our summer training programs. God's changed his life. He's now given his life to making disciples on a college campus. They're in a learning mode. They're away from home. Now, a lot of times if you're in a church and a young man is a Catholic in your neighborhood and he starts going to a nearby college, he doesn't automatically see he ought to change churches. But we've had many students, Catholics and all kinds of people, and we get them in a dorm Bible study with just a guy down the hall. No experts in the group, just guys down the hall. And then eventually We would get them to come. Like out of that 120, one went to church. One Sunday in the church where I go, I count 17 varsity football players. Pastor still doesn't know how they got there. But one night I'm having Bible study, and the guy says, Max, where do you go to church? I said, I go down here at Baptist church. You want to go with me? He said, yeah. If you wake me up on Sunday morning, I said, that's not a problem. Give me your phone number. And eventually, as you begin to meet with people, they'll want to go where you go. But when once they get on that college campus, some of them that are totally inaccessible now, they're away from home. And we've had a lot of Catholics and others come to our Bible studies. They don't even want their parents to know. But then the day comes, they meet Christ, and they go home and say, Mom, Dad, you know, I know you raised me in a church, but this church is not doing it for me. I'm going to a church now where they really teach the Bible. They're mature enough to make life changes. They've not usually made life-scarring decisions like they hadn't been divorced. A friend of mine, pastor in Colorado, said most of the people I knew there that we ministered to, he said they've been on their second or third divorce. It's been so hard. He resigned his church, went to Oklahoma State. He said, I want to give the rest of my life. I don't want to be having a lot of meetings. I just want to give my time to discipling students. He had five students that graduated this year that are staying to help him next year. He's given his life to making disciples. Now, wherever you go, whatever you do, the command, the Great Commission, applies to you. You make disciples, and you teach them all that Jesus commanded, and I think there are about 49 commands in the New Testament Jesus gave, but what did he just finish? You teach them to make disciples. And so we're never through with a person unless he's a disciple maker. And I would suggest to you, when you are in a church and you have high school students, you send them the way to college as disciple makers. When they go, they're looking for a good church. They're looking for an on-campus organization to plug into. And they know how to witness. They know how to have a quiet time. They know how to walk with God. And they're going to give their lives to trying to minister to others. Now, God bless you in whatever ministry God calls you to. But whatever you do, build disciple makers who can make disciples of others. That's the only way we're ever going to make an impact in this world. Thank you.